everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go. All right. Well, welcome, Chase Oaks. Everybody online and podcasting and in the room, whatever room you're in, really, really happy that you are here. And I was away last week celebrating. I spoke at Christ Fellowship in McKinney. Bruce Miller, who was on our staff years ago, we started that church years ago, and he's retiring here in a couple weeks, and I was there speaking as part of that process. So if you know Bruce, let me encourage you to reach out to him, message him, figure out how to email him or something, and just say, way to go, congratulations, because finishing well as a leader is something to celebrate. And he's not dead, but you know, at least the senior pastoral. And this week also, I was in South Carolina at a gathering of young leaders. These were leaders 40 and under who lead churches of 1,000 or more all around the country. And I was there as kind of the old guy, I guess. They called me a mentor. But the reason I'm saying that is it was so encouraging to see what God is doing. And it's easy to look at our world and see the news and see all this stuff and just think, oh man, I don't know if anything good happening. God is on the move. He's doing his thing. And as Jesus said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And I'm coming here so full and so appreciative of what God is doing in our church and churches all over the place. And I'm glad that you're here because there's a role for you to play and a way for you to engage. And so thank you for being here. So today we are continuing the series called Record Scratch, which is about these statements, some statements of Jesus that when you hear them, 2,000 years ago was a record scratch moment. And when we read the Bible now, same thing. You're like, did he just say that? And today is certainly one of those because today at first glance, especially, is pretty offensive. You're like, did Jesus just call a whole bunch of people that and that? Like, why would he do that? And what we're gonna see once we understand it, it's actually not offensive. It's actually really helpful for us. It's a helpful guide in a tricky world. If you have something good to share that would be helpful for someone else, how do you share that in a way, in an overly sensitive world, that doesn't cause people to get upset? Like, I don't want to hear you, you know, you do you, I'll do me and all that. And because in our world right now, people are kind of, you know, a little touchy, right? And so even if you have something good to share, like, let's just say general things, like maybe, you know, financial stuff, you know, and you see people making mistakes, maybe adult children or friends or family or whatever. And you're like, you know, if you just save money every once in a while, it might be good, you know, whatever, but how do you do that? Or maybe health advice or nutrition stuff or relational help. And you think, oh man, it'd be so much better if, you know, but how do you share stuff in a world that people are kind of uptight? And then we have, as for those of us who are Christians, we have the most important truth in the world. The Bible calls it gospel, which is just means good news. That's translated just good news. Good news about how God sent Jesus into the world so that we could know him, that our lives could be changed, and we could make a difference in our world. And all. I mean, there's nothing more significant than the good news that we have to share. And a lot of us who have wrapped our lives around that would be like, yeah, I would love to be able to share that with people, but how, when in a world where people kind of get, they don't want you to talk about that. And, you know, like people say, you know, don't talk about money or politics or religion. And well, but yeah, but we want to be influential. We want to share. We want to be able to talk. So how do we do that? And it's so tricky that it causes some extremes. Like either people who will just be like, you know what? I'm just going to share it anyway. I don't care if people get upset or not. They should want to know, even if they don't want to know. So I'm just going to say it. Right? You got that. And then you've got, on the other side, people who are like, you know what? I'm just not going to say anything Because if you say anything, it just causes problems, and I don't want to cause problems, and so I'm just going to act like I'm not going to say anything. And both of those are counterproductive. Both of those are not helpful. And what Jesus is going to do in this statement is give us a better way. A way to share, a way to be influential that doesn't produce so much recoil, but actually might even be super helpful. And that gets us to the statement. But the statement, when you read it at first glance, is, you know, pretty offensive. And that's why I have this pig with pearls. Her name is Pearlicious. I named her. And Pearlicious is going to help me today. I want you to think about a pig with pearls, because Jesus, this is a statement that he makes. And the statement is going to be super helpful of how to be helpful, how to share things in a way that maybe can be influential instead of the opposite of that. And here's the statement. Jesus said, Matthew 7:6, "Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." So Jesus is saying something about pearls and pigs and sacred things and dogs. And you might guess that pearls are valuable truth. Like we could call it like things like the gospel, the good news of Jesus. And it sounds like when you just first hear it, that Jesus is saying, okay, you've got some valuable truth, but these people out here, they're dogs and they're pigs, and just better not to even try. And so you read it, you're like, well, who's he calling pigs? Is he calling non-believers pigs and dogs? And because that's pretty, I mean, that's offensive, right? And it's offensive now, but 2,000 years ago, even more so. On both counts, pigs and dogs. Like pigs, 2,000 years ago, Jesus is speaking to a Jewish audience, and pigs were considered unclean. They didn't eat pork because of that. So they did not know the glory of bacon. They did not know the glory of a pulled pork sandwich. That's barbecue for me in Alabama, is pork. And none of that, right? But they knew about pigs. I mean, they'd seen pigs. They had pigs around, but those pigs were raised for the Romans and for outsiders and for Gentiles, like Roman soldiers and all that. So they would see it, but they did not eat it, and they considered pigs unclean. So to call somebody a pig now is probably not a way to endear yourself to them, but 2,000 years ago, it would have been like crazy offensive. Same with dogs. Like, I have a dog. In fact, I'll go and I haven't shown Chewy in a while. Here's Chewy. And Chewy's an awesome little dog. He's going to make an appearance, I think, at our Christmas services this year. But Chewy's amazing, right? We love Chewy, and he's awesome. He's part of the family. In fact, I sleep with two beings, you know, every night. My wife, Christy, and Chewy, my dog. And some of you who are dog people, when you hear that, are like, oh, of course you do. You know, of course. And some of you who are not dog people are like, you do, you sleep with what? You know, and you're like, I got to get a new pastor. This is too much. Like, this, you're just a weirdo. And I get it, right? Because you're not a dog. Okay, well, 2,000 years ago, nobody was a dog person. Nobody thought about sleeping with dogs and that kind of stuff. Dogs were not pets. Dogs were, unless, I mean, for a few very wealthy people maybe, but dogs generally in that culture just were wild kind of, I mean, dogs just kind of scrounging around and running around these mangy things that would pack up, you know, get in packs, and they were kind of seen as dangerous, and you just tried to stay away from them. So to call somebody a dog, nobody would go, aw, right? That was offensive. Call somebody a pig, that was offensive. And so when you see it that way and think about it that way, you think, okay, is what Jesus saying that we've got these wonderful truths about Jesus and so on, but people out there don't appreciate them. They're dogs, and therefore don't share it. I mean, like this, it's what Jesus is saying is, as a believer, you have wonderful truths to share, like pearls, valuable. But these unbelievers in our sinful world have no appreciation for goodness. They're dogs and pigs, and therefore not worthy of our engagement. You're just wasting your time. Now, you can Google it, sermons on this passage, and find exactly that. Sermons that will say, yeah, that's what Jesus was saying. However, you might guess, it is a gross misinterpretation of what Jesus said. That is not at all what Jesus was actually teaching. And so whenever you interpret, and we're going to look at what he did say, because when you interpret the Bible, there's a very basic rule of interpretation in any passage. And that is always interpret a text within its context. Every text has a context, has a setting. You can't just pull something out. You have to look at, well, what's it part of? Like, just like in conversation, you know, you maybe could say something and somebody can take a phrase and in a bigger conversation and pull that phrase and say, did you know what so-and-so said? And if they take that out of context, you're like, I didn't say that. Or, yeah, okay, I said those words, but that's not what I meant. It was part of a bigger context. Same thing with the Bible. So in this case, this statement, this passage is part of Jesus's Sermon on the Mount, which is in a longer sermon. And part of that sermon, in the part that this is taken from, is from a little section where Jesus is really talking about mistakes that religious people in particular make when they engage each other as religious people and people who are not religious, mistakes we tend to make. And for like last week, Eric talked about how to not be judgmental in the wrong way. Don't judge lest you be judged. And then if there's, you know, if you may have a, you may, you know, don't worry so much about a speck in somebody else's eye. If you've got a big fat plank in your own eye and what that means, those are mistakes religious people make, being judgy in the wrong way. Well, those are the verses exactly in front of it. Like this just comes next. This is part of that same conversation. So he's talking about mistakes religious people make. It's not focused so much on somebody being, you know, them being unworthy or bad. He's not so focused on the unworthiness of those who hear it, but it's something about a mistake that those of us who have truth might make. So here's my way of understanding it, or I think what Jesus was saying, is the point is not about the unworthiness of the pigs, but the unhelpfulness of the pearls. Pearls are valuable to us, but have no value to pigs. And what Jesus is saying is be sensitive to that. Yes, that we have truth, but let's be sensitive to the receptivity and openness of the people we're sharing it with, because it may not yet be valuable to them. Let's not be pearl pushers. Let's be sensitive in the way we represent, in the way that we represent truth. So another way to say what Jesus was saying, when he says, okay, don't throw pearls to pigs or stuff to dogs, is just, hey, you know what? Be aware, right? Be sensitive to, so that what we have to share is actually helpful. Now, you may think that because I grew up in Alabama, I know all about pigs, right? That every day I went out and fed pigs and did things because that's what you do when you're in Alabama. Just like when people move here to Texas from California, or you know, you've moved from New York and you think everybody here walks around with cowboy hats and cowboy boots and, you know, guns. Well, okay, there are guns, but you know, and horses and stuff. And then you're surprised, right? Kind of a letdown. You get here and it's like, oh man, there's none of that. And in Alabama, no, I'm sure there are people that have pigs, but we did not have pigs. My dad was an engineer and we lived in a suburban life, you know. But I have seen pigs being fed. And I did raise two teenage boys too, and it's kind of similar when they get hungry. So picture feeding pigs. So when, you know, when you, let's say you got, you any pig suey people out there, Arkansas people, can call the pigs? Our daughter, yeah, both of my boys went there too. But no Woo Pig Suey people, maybe on Sunday, but I don't even know how to do it. But the Woo Pig Suey, you know, and they call the pigs, and you call the pigs, and so picture these pigs, right? They're hungry. They're, you know, doing their thing, right? And so they're coming in, and they're, oh, wow, we get to be food, right? So they're waiting for food, and they're excited about food. They come into the trough, and you throw the pearls. Instead of food, you throw pearls in the trough. What's going to happen? Well, they don't know what to do with pearls, right? They don't care about pearls. They're looking for slop. Now, you might think, wait a minute. Don't you realize this is so much more valuable than slop? These are pearls. These are priceless. I mean, come on, you ungrateful pigs. Don't you realize what I'm giving you? And of course they don't, because they're not a place to understand the value of the pearls. Be like using another analogy. We have Christmas coming up in a few months, okay? So let's say you have two kids in the house, a 6-year-old and a 16-year-old. You've got a big gap. You have a 6-year-old boy, 16-year-old girl. So it's Christmas morning, and it's time to open presents. And the six-year-old little boy comes to the tree, and there's six big, huge wrapped presents with his name on it, and he can't believe it. He's so excited because they're big. And he's thinking, oh, wow, I wonder what's in there. This is going to be amazing, right? And you're excited, too, because you know what you gave him. And what you gave him was really valuable. You gave him a full set, six pieces of Louis Vuitton luggage. You spent $30,000 or $40,000 on this luggage, and it is valuable. It's amazing, right? And you think, who would not want a full set of Louis Vuitton luggage? A six-year-old little boy, right? It would not want, right? And so the six-year-old opens it and sees luggage. Oh, this is a trick. He opens the luggage and there's nothing in there because it's not valuable to him. It's not that it's not valuable to somebody, but it's not valuable yet to him. And then you got your 16-year-old. Well, there's no gift under the tree for your 16-year-old. And she's a little disappointed, but you say, oh, well, there's no gift under the tree because your gift is in the garage. Because you just got your license. Wow, she lights up. Oh, I can't believe it. She starts crying. You're the best parents ever. And you all go out to the garage, and there in the garage waiting is this brand new, red, shiny lawnmower. And you say, oh, this is going to be so great. You can start a little business. You can mow lawns. And eventually, you can buy yourself a car. And that might be a wonderful thing, but at the time, not going to be highly appreciated, right? And that's the principle. It's just, hey, let's make sure that we match what we share, that we're just sensitive to the receptivity of the people. It may be valuable to us, but let's be sensitive to where they're at in the way that we share. And so, there we go. The idea is just not be a pearl pusher, not to push what we believe, but to actually represent what we believe in a way that creates pull, that creates endearment. Because you know what it's like to be on the other end of a pushy person, right? Have you ever been around a pushy person? Somebody who's just so excited to share things that you really don't want to hear? I mean, if you play golf very much, this has happened. Where you're just out to play golf. But somebody that is a golf buddy or somebody maybe you don't even know, there's always this person out on a golf course, really wants to share golf tips, right? And usually they're about a 25 handicap, and they've got all these ideas, and so every time you get up there, it's like, oh, your posture, be more athletic, you're too upright, or your backswing is too inside, you're gonna have to come over the top, or whatever it is, right? And it may be fine, but you're just like, I really just want to play golf. Like one day maybe I'll go get a lesson, but right now, can we just play golf? Like, every time I get up here, I don't want to be all this stuff thinking in my head, so can we just not do that? Can we just, right? Or maybe you know that if you have a friend who's really into nutrition and you go out for ice cream. It's no fun, right? Because they don't order anything. And they're just kind of looking at you, and you're like, really? They look at you, and if they say something like, so you're going to get two scoops with hot fudge? And whipped cream? Really? You're like, would you just let me enjoy my ice cream? Like, would you stop, right? We all know what it's like to be on that side. And what Jesus is saying is, let's just be careful, let's be wise, let's not make the mistake religious people make by being pushy with what we believe, even though it's wonderful and it's life-changing, the truth sets people free. But if we care about truth, let's do it in a way where they're most likely to be able to receive it. To make sure that they're receptive. Another way to say that is the law of supply and demand. That let's make sure we match supply with demand. I mean, that's true in general, not even about spiritual things, but anything. Like when you're trying to give advice to kids or friends or spouses or coworkers or whatever, that, if there's a demand, then okay, then give some supply. But don't give supply when there's no demand. try to match it up as much as possible so that people can then absorb it and appreciate it rather than resent it, especially when it comes to spiritual things. Because we have the most powerful and important truth in the world. The gospel, the good news about Jesus. And like Jesus said, the truth, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And we see people and you're like, your life could be so much more free. It could be so much better with Jesus. And so let's talk about that a little bit. How do those of us who know Jesus, how do we represent him in a way in a world like this where people get freaked out so easily when you talk about religious things? How can we represent Jesus in a way without avoiding the mistake that Jesus is talking about? And the good news there is the New Testament goes on, and there's a Bible talks about this multiple times, but what we're going to look at is another verse. It's just a very powerful one that's going to help fill out what Jesus said, the principle. And it's from Peter, who was one of the disciples who was present at this sermon where Jesus talked about the pearl and the pigs. And Peter is an interesting guy because he writes two books in the New Testament, 1 Peter, 2 Peter. Also interesting because of all the people who would help other people with saying, hey, be careful how you use your words and how you use your mouth, Peter would be the one to be like, yeah, he's not the one. Because Peter tended to talk without thinking. He tended to speak before he thought things through. But he learned the hard way. But he learned. And he shares when he writes to these Christians that he's writing to in 1 and 2 Peter, they're Christians in the metroplex of Rome, in the area of Rome. These are new Christians in a time, in a pre-Christian culture, where Christianity is very new and very weird to people. And so they're there to hopefully share the good news with people about Jesus in a culture that sees Christianity as very weird, very strange, maybe even dangerous. There's a lot of slander going on around Christians. There's persecution. And how are they going to represent Jesus, be light in a dark world when they're facing all of that? And Peter talks about it. And I think for us, super helpful because we don't live in a pre-Christian culture, but we do live in an increasingly post-Christian culture, and there's some similarities. So how do we represent Jesus well? Well, he talks about it a lot, but I'm just going to boil it down to two verses, 1 Peter 3, 15 and 16. And he says this, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. Three big principles here that if you want to be influential, and I think you do, and even if you're not a Christian, by the way, you have a story to tell. God is doing something in your life. You wouldn't be here otherwise. You're open. You're figuring things out. God is at work. But for those of us who are Christians, certainly, man, we want to do what Jesus asks us to do, and that is tell people about him. And what Peter says here to the Romans is so helpful to us. And so I'm going to draw out three principles here. The first one is, if we want to be influential, not the opposite, with the truth that we have, is live a compelling life. That's why he says, man, be ready to share when people ask you what's the reason for the hope you have. Notice, people are coming to you. They're curious about you. That's the compelling life. Elsewhere, Peter talks about that. I just don't have time to read all the passages about how we are to relate to people in a way that makes the gospel something that is attractive, that creates curiosity. Peter says also, relate in such a way that even if people have said bad things about you, because there's a lot of bad rumors about Christianity going on in that culture, they'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry I ever thought that. I'm so sorry I ever shared that. That is not at all what you're about, and that they'll be ashamed that they ever did that. And so Peter talks about that through the whole book. But the idea is to live an endearing, compelling life that's not about being pushy, pull pusher, but that creates pull, that creates curiosity, that causes people to want more. I mean, think about it this way with a golf illustration and somebody giving golf tips. I may not want the average 20 handicapper giving me golf tips, but if I'm on the range and Tiger Woods walks up and is like, hey, you know what? I saw something in your swing. I don't know if you're open, but I'd love to just share something with you. I think it could really help. I'd be like, are you kidding? As much as you can share, I want it all. This would be amazing. I may not go to him for marriage advice, but for golf advice, I'd be like, okay, please. Like, yeah, absolutely. Because who's more compelling than him when it comes to golf? Right? And it's the same thing in life, to live such a compelling life, not perfect, but authentic, where God is changing us and all that, where people, and we're loving people the way Jesus calls us to love people. I mean, just take that. Jesus said, love people the way, you know, this is the way you'll be known. Love one another the way I've loved you. If we're known as that loving, that will create pull in a self-centered world where we're, it's like who, like a lot of people, if we live the way Jesus did, then there, and called it to, called us, calls us to, there's going to be a whole lot of people that are going to say, hey, why are you doing this for me? Like, why are you that generous? Or, hey, how could you just forgive like that? Like, I mean, what I did, I mean, really? You're just going to let me off the hook? Or, like, why do you even, what, you know, you're serving me this way, and it, like, you know, you're doing this for my family when we're in a time of crisis, a neighbor or something. It's like, why are you doing this? And then his friends see just how you live a life that's increasingly like Jesus, that is has full of character and goodness and all that. And people would be like, what's your deal? So to live a compelling life that creates pull. And then be ready to share. That's the second principle. That's what he says. Be ready to share the reason for the hope that you have. What drives your life? What drives your hope? Especially in a world like this where things are kind of dark, and there's a lot of not hope. Like, what's the reason for the hope you have? How come you're not like in the ditch like everybody? How come you're sort of riding above this? And part of hope too is just living a life of constant transformation and love and peace and all that. And we should be ready to give an answer. Like we should be ready to share our faith, to be, if we have faith, to share with others about Jesus and what he's done for us and how people can access that. And I think most Christians in our culture right now, I don't think they're ready. And I think it's kind of scary. Well, who am I to share my faith? And what if they ask things I don't understand? And what if I say the wrong thing? And so we're gonna do a series, the one series after this. We've got a couple more weeks of this series. But in a couple weeks, we'll start a new series called Ripple Effect. And the whole idea of Ripple Effect is saying, hey, it's one thing, like as a church, we do a lot in our community and world, and we gather together and you're like, hear about local good and you hear about global stuff and all that. So like, oh, it's amazing. And you're doing it. You're part of it. And you're, you know, everybody, a lot of people volunteering and doing all that. And that's amazing, right? Well, we can do centralized in a centralized way as a church. But what we're talking about in that series is, hey, let's talk about the decentralized. You know, the church gathers and we can do a lot of things, but God has also scattered us everywhere. He's scattered us on purpose. And he's placed you in your workplace and neighborhood and school and so on purpose. And in the world on purpose. And what does that mean to fulfill our purpose? And part of that is, well, how do we share with another person how they can come to know God through faith in Jesus? And I think the best way is to share our story. But we're gonna have a week on that. And we'll have weeks on other things. What does that mean at work? What does that mean on so on? So please make that a priority. And because as I was praying for our church, on study break, it was like, man, one of the biggest burdens I had was this. It's like, man, it's so cool what we get to do when we gather together, and Chase Oaks is doing a lot, and that's great. You can go, yay. But, man, what about where we are placed, everywhere we're placed, and how can we equip each other to be increasingly effective where we are, to be ready to share? And then when we do share, to do so with gentleness and respect, to share with gentleness and respect. That's exactly what he said. But do this with gentleness and respect. That when we share with other people truths, especially wonderful truths like the grace of Jesus and the love of Jesus, let's make sure we do that with gentleness, not pushiness, and respect. Respect means it's not just a one-way conversation. I'm humble, I'm respectful, I listen, I don't just talk. It's a dialogue. I'm willing to learn, not just be the expert. Because they're the expert of their journey. And we'll talk about in the series how to relate to people that way. But let's make sure we're relating to our culture with the tone, same tone that Jesus had. To let Jesus set our tone. And honestly, if that's all we do, if we just have a tone of gentleness and respect and humility in our culture right now that has very little of that when people share things, that will draw people to Jesus. That will draw people to us. Let me give an example of what not to do. And then in the series, we'll give some to do's. So I have a good friend who's not a Christian, but he's open. And I talk to him about Christ all the time, and we have, and he's on a journey, and I'm on a journey, and we're all, you know, so, but he just has some things that really hard for him to just cross the line of faith. And they're good questions, good things to work through. But a while back, he called me and he said, "Hey man, I need you to, like, you know, you pray and stuff. I need you to probably pray for me because I'm really mad right now." Christians. It's like, "Well, what are you mad at?" And he's like, "Well, this guy I met in business said, hey, he wanted to talk to me about some business thing." And so we go to lunch, and it turns out it wasn't a business thing. It was a bait and switch. He wanted to talk to me about Jesus. So that was the first thing. And he just starts talking about Jesus and the cross and resurrection, just goes through the whole story. And so my friend stopped him. He's very direct. And he stopped him. He said, "Hey, you know what? You're giving me the sales pitch. I get it. I've heard it 500 times, and I could give it just as well as you're giving it. I know all those things. Like, I get the sales pitch. I appreciate, you know, you're trying to help me understand it. I thank you for that. But really, I got it. I know the sales pitch. However, I've got some problems with the pitch, which is why I haven't bought into it." And then the guy asked a great question. He said, "Well, tell me then what your issues are. Like, what would keep you from buying into what you call the sales pitch?" Awesome. Great question. And then he shared, "Well, here's some of the things." And that's when it went south. Because this Christian on the other side of the table lost patience, lost gentleness, and just said, "You know what? All those things are not even real. That's just a smoke screen. And what you'll find one day, and I hope it's not in hell, you'll find one day is that these things that are a big deal to you are not a big deal at all. And it just, it's not even a real question. It's just a smoke screen." And my friend puts down money on the table, cash on the table, because lunch is over, gets up, looks at him and says, "Thank you," and walks out. Except he didn't say thank you. He said, "Blank you." And what Jesus is saying is, hey, you know what? How do we relate to people in a way where people say thank you rather than blank you? Another way to say it. Because we do live in a sensitive world where we have the most important thing to share ever in the history of things to share. We have light in a dark world. And how can we do this? Well, we live a compelling life that creates pull. We're ready to share our faith, but we do that in a respectful and gentle and humble way. And one way to help us think through this is something Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians, that we don't have to seal the deal. You know, we're not salespeople. God is the one who pulls people toward himself ultimately and is the one working in people's lives. We just get to be part of that. And Paul said this in 1 Corinthians 3. He said, "We're only God's servants through whom you believe the good news. Each of us did the work the Lord gave us. I planted the seed in your hearts, and Apollos, this other guy, watered it, but it was God who made it grow. It's not important who does the planting or who does the watering. What's important is that God makes the seed grow. The one who plants and the one who waters works together with the same purpose." What he's saying is we just never know what our role is in the process of joining God and helping others and to have a relationship with Jesus. And sometimes we may have a conversation with somebody and think, "I don't think anything happened, because we didn't see any fruit," right? And we get discouraged. But what we don't realize is we may have planted a seed and it's underneath the surface. You can't see any fruit and all that. And all we are, but that, what Paul is saying, that was our job. All our job was not to be pushy or whatever, just to do our part and to do that in a sensitive way to where they're at, to where they're receptive right now, as Jesus said in the principle. And we just planted a seed and we have no idea. We may never know how that seed will eventually grow. Because somebody else will come along and they'll water that seed with some other conversation. Still nothing coming up through the surface. Somebody else will come and water. Somebody else will come and water. Somebody else will come and water. But eventually, as God is working in their lives, all of a sudden, foop, something happens. And it's cool when we're there for that. But no matter what, right? Our job is just to join God in what he's doing, realize I have a part, but I don't have to force anything. I don't have to seal the deal. I just have to say, "God, how can I relate to this person? Help me relate in wisdom and share as it's appropriate and sensitive to where they're coming from so that I don't become a pearl pusher, but I do have something to share and I want to be faithful to that." And so here's what I want us to do. I want us to go to God with this because God, you know, wants to use you and me to be influential in people's lives, especially when it comes to spiritual things, especially when it comes to those who don't know Jesus coming to know Jesus. I mean, how they'll know is largely through you and me. And whether that's inviting them to church or having a spiritual conversation or sharing your story or whatever it is, how do we, you know, we need wisdom in doing that. So we're going to look to God for that. And what I want you to do is I want you to think of one person in your life right now. One person who, you know, doesn't know Jesus. And even if you're not a Christian, right, I know you can think of somebody that you could help on their journey as well. But think about one person. They think, I'm not sure where they're at spiritually, or maybe you are, but just think, and get a name, because we're going to pray for that name. And the cool thing is there's a good chance at some point somebody, when they thought of a name, you know who they thought of? You. Right? I bet you can think of somebody that was influential in your story and your journey that created a sense of pull that you respected, and they invited you and you said yes, or they shared about Jesus and you said yes, or maybe you haven't said yes yet, but you're at least on the journey here, because that's the way God does this. And would it be cool to be able to look back, all of us, and see two or three or four or five people that we were influential in their journey? And so right now, I just wanted to think about one, okay? We're going to go to God with that and ask God for wisdom and receptivity. Wisdom for us and receptivity for them. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for being gentle and patient, even humble and respectful with us in our journey. And you're working in our lives. And for many of us in this room, you've pulled us in a relationship with you, and you've used people in that process. And God, would you help us be useful too? And so right now, I'm going to ask everybody, I'm not talking to God, I'm talking to you now. Just in your own heart, just name that person that God has put on your heart. Just say, God, I pray for whoever that is. And then just ask him, God, would you give me wisdom to know how I can share light, how I can share good news, how I can be good news, how I can be compelling, how I can love, how I can have conversations that are significant. Maybe it's planting a seed, maybe it's watering, I don't know, but God, give me wisdom to know what it means for me just to do my part, and help me be sensitive to where they're at. Not insensitive to where they're at, where I get pushy, but just sensitive to where they're at so that I can share in a way that has an opportunity for receptivity. And then pray for them and ask God to help them be open and receptive. He's the one that creates spiritual thirst. He's the one that pulls people toward himself. And I've shared before how I have people in my life who are in heaven now, my brother, my dad, that, especially my brother, I didn't know I would put him on the list of the last person to ever come to know Jesus. For one time, just because he had good skeptical reasons. He wasn't a bad person, but just skeptical. And he became a believer because of Chase Oaks online, and he's in heaven now because he died. He had cancer and died. I'm so thankful for that, right? But I didn't see God at work and all that, but God was working the whole time. So just when you think about that person, pray, God, you know, give me hope and give me courage and just help me hang in there. And continue to reach out, continue to love, continue to do what you want me to do, and help them be open and receptive. Father, thank you that you love to use us in your work in the world. And as you said one time, look at the fields, they're white unto harvest, talking about culture and how you're always at work in pulling people towards yourself. And would you help us do our part in the harvest field? In Jesus' name, amen.